You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today is Friday, so this is the Friday edition. Normally, the Friday edition is longer, but today it will not be a long show, probably an hour at most. And it's going to concern the jobs report that was published this morning, I think 8:30 East Coast time. And what I'm talking about is every month, the Department of Labor Bureau of Labor Statistics releases to the press the results of two surveys, their household survey as well as their establishment survey. And based on that sample, they tell you what the unemployment rate is, they tell you how many non-farm payroll jobs were created, and this report was, I guess, mediocre would probably be the best way to say it. It was below economists' expectations, but not much. But what was the number? What's the number you'll hear is the unemployment rate, the U3 unemployment rate, also called the headline rate. And there was a slight uptick in the unemployment rate from 4.9 to 5%. Now, you need to know that near full employment rate is around 3. Now, you'll get an argument amongst economists as to what that near full employment rate is. When I was a grad student, it definitely was 3% or lower. And we've actually had unemployment rates below 3%, but you have to go back to the 1950s. What's happened is, over the years, and I think it's because of failed economic policies and the government getting bigger and bigger and bigger and literally consuming more and more resources by taxing, first of all, the American people, then printing debt, and then printing money. I say issuing debt. I shouldn't say printing debt, but you got to print it. So what's happened over time, there's been sort of a creep of what's called near full employment rates. And some economists would actually argue that the new normal or the new near full employment rate is more like 4% or even higher. I don't agree with that. The reason why you have high unemployment rates and a stagnating economy is because of government is out of control. The federal government is simply spending too much money and not confronting or dealing with the issue. That's what's driving that. There's no secret. And see, people in Congress know what's driving, but they don't want to tell you. And that's primarily, actually, there are three programs, and then the interest. The big three are entitlement programs. That's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and now Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act. Second is what most people call welfare. The government calls income security. That's welfare, folks, including food stamps and your monthly check and your earned income tax credit. There are a number, about half a dozen of major programs, and they have literally dozens of welfare programs. The third is defense, national defense spending. And if you want to be policeman of the world and have an American empire and the United States being country after country after country with bases and have warehouses, that requires a lot of money, a lot of treasure, and unfortunately a lot of lives of American citizens that serve in our armed forces. So those are the big three drivers in terms of what's causing out-of-control government spending. And the fourth one is interest. Now, up to now, interest in terms of the total federal budget is around 6%. That could easily be 3 to 4 times in the next roughly 14 years plus. Because what's happening as more and more baby boom generate, as more of the baby boom generation retires and starts collecting Social Security and Medicare benefits, that the percentage of the budget dedicated to just entitlement programs will get bigger and bigger. And it will, in effect, what it will do is squeeze out other departments. Now, I've been arguing for several years now that we need several things. One is, first and foremost, is to start closing federal departments. I think there's at least 8. I could argue 10, but there's at least 8 federal departments that need to be closed. And I mean permanently closed. We don't need them. And I'll give you quickly the list. Agriculture, commerce, labor, education, energy, interior, transportation, housing and urban development. And I know I'm missing some, but those are the ones I would definitely close. Who should you keep? Clearly, the first and foremost function of government is to protect its citizens. So you need a strong national defense. I emphasize defense to protect an American republic. What you don't need is a huge military to defend an American empire and be policemen of the world and intervene in country after country. The American people are tired of that. They're tired of seeing their sons and daughters deployed for years on end in countries that don't want us there, and invariably the people perceive us as occupiers, and then they start killing us. In other words, there's no real thank you at all for liberating them. Like in Iraq, oh, they loved us for the first 6 months. After about a year, they started killing us, seriously killing us. So the American people are fed up with that. They don't want intervention abroad. Donald Trump better wake up to that, because he keeps saying he's going to destroy the Islamic State. Well, I agree. The Islamic State needs to be destroyed, but who should destroy it? I'll tell you who should destroy it. Not U.S. soldiers. Arab Sunnis. That means Saudi military, the Jordanian military, the Egyptian military, and Turkish Sunnis. They were, to varying degrees, responsible, as were other Arab countries, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, in supplying the money and funds that initially started what is now the Islamic State. So they created the monster. They should destroy the monster. Now, we helped them, and that's the dirty little secret. We were shipping arms to them, either knowingly or unknowingly. Doesn't make any difference if they get the arms. So we have challenges ahead. And if you listen to the show, you know that I believe in roughly 2030, in that time frame, it hits the fan, because the baby boom generation right now is slightly less than 75 million people. I'm at the leading edge of that baby boom generation, as is Donald Trump. And if you listen to Donald Trump, he does not want to touch Social Security or Medicare. Why, that makes a lot of political sense. It unfortunately doesn't deal with the problem. And the problem is this. We all hear about $20 trillion national debt. It's not quite $20 trillion. And it looks like the deficit for this year will be over $500 billion. I was listening to the news, and this was more or less an advance number. That's why it caught my attention, because usually the Treasury is late in publishing what the actual deficit was for 2016 that ended September 30th. The number I heard from out of the Congressional Budget Office, and this is an estimate, it was about $588 billion. I said all along that I thought it would be somewhere between $500 and $600 billion, so it's in that range. I was looking for more information and thought maybe it would be closer to $500 billion, but it looks like it's the other way, and the reason is taxes, tax collections. And that is somewhat disturbing, because if tax collections are down, that tells me that companies are not earning enough money to pay taxes. That's a possible explanation. I don't know. So you got to take a long view, look at where we are, where we're going, what's generating the problem, and what do we need to do about it. And the problem is, we're not talking about it. I seriously doubt there'll be many questions, if any, at the next second debate come this Sunday. I really do. They seem to want to talk about Donald Trump's tax returns, that he's unfit. What they don't talk about is the criminal activity of Hillary Clinton. She's unfit. Now, what's interesting, and I always get a chuckle about this, Hillary Clinton keeps raising the issue of Donald Trump's temperament. However, Hillary Clinton, and this is numerous reports, has a well-deserved reputation to having a terrible temper. A lot of it is directed at her husband, and she has a potty mouth. In other words, she curses. She hides all that when she's in public. And WikiLeaks came out with leaks about some emails that Podesta and had between her, and also information as to what she spoke about with the various investment banks. And she made the point that she has two positions, a public position, that's what she tells you and me, and then a private position, that's what she tells the donor class. In other words, the investment banks, the people that support her campaign. And they differ rather radically. She clearly is for open borders, and she wants to combine a number of nations. American people don't want that. And once they learn about that, if they do, because what's the problem? Big lie media keeps reports that the Clintons don't want to be questioned on away from the American people. Now, I've been clear that the candidate that would make the illegal invasion of this country a key part of his campaign will win. I didn't believe that having one issue would guarantee that win. And that's why we have right now a close race. I still think Donald Trump will win. A key proviso is he's going to have to do very, very well in this debate. But my frustration is neither candidate, neither Hillary Clinton nor Donald Trump, really will explain in detail how are they going to, first, balance the budget. And the answer is, the reason why they're not talking about it, is they don't plan to balance the budget. Neither the Democratic Party, the Republican Party has no plans. In other words, the number one problem is out of control government spending, largely driven by entitlement programs, welfare programs, and military programs, defense programs. Those are the drivers. And if we don't deal with it, we'll continue doing what we do every month. We get, the U.S. federal government gets tax collections, but it's short. It's short a lot. So then it issues securities, treasury notes, bills, and bonds, primarily 10-year notes, but also long-term. And what's going to happen? At some point, interest rates, the federal funds target rate, it's going to have to go up, especially if we have inflation. Now, right now, many of you will say, well, inflation is more or less under control. It's 1% or less, below the 2% target. You see, what economists have been doing, especially ones that work at the Fed, but also in the federal government, they exclude two major items. Actually, they exclude a lot more from the CPI that they look at. They exclude energy, and they exclude food. Now, what's the problem with that? I don't know about these economists, but every week or two, I have to fill up my car, and I'm not using my car as much as I did when I was in the financial service industry, where I'd fill up two or three times a week because I did a lot of traveling. Now I don't travel that much. But Americans have to go to work every day, and that means filling up their car. So energy is definitely a big part of their budget. It's not huge, but it's significant. And as energy prices go up, they have less money to spend on other things. Now, what's the second thing that Americans have to buy? Food. So one of the two key items that they have to spend money on every month are excluded from what the actual Fed looks at. That should amaze you. It amazes me. I know what's going on. Anyone can play this game. They do the same thing with the unemployment numbers as well. They're scared of the people. So politicians change the definitions of what inflation is, what unemployment is. That's the dirty little secret. That's the game they play, and they do it at the direction usually the president or the Treasury Secretary or the chairman of the Fed. So you won't panic. You won't get mad. Now, this show is about the jobs report, but you can't understand the jobs report unless you start to connect a number of dots. And that's where I tend to lose people, especially those that have never taken an economics course, which is most people. But they know when they're employed or unemployed. Because when you ask the American people what are their concerns, jobs in the economy are usually one or two, or two or one. Now, obviously, if you have a good paying job and you think you have security, you don't worry about it too much. That's a rather short-sighted attitude for the simple reason if we go into another major recession, and I think it could very well be worse than the recession of 2007, 8, 9. If we go into, and it started in December of 2007. Remember, a recession is measured from the top or the boom, the very top to the bottom, the peak to the trough. So the peak was in December in terms of the U.S. economy of 2007. Most of your layoffs really took place in the latter part of 2008 and early part, first half of 2009. That's when we were seeing not only negative growth rates of the real gross domestic product, but we also were seeing higher and higher unemployment rates. It finally hit 10%, I believe it was in December of 2009, because the unemployment rates tend to lag the rest of the economy. In other words, the economy was on its way to recovery and recovering or expanding starting in July of 2008. Now, that was 8 years ago. So we've had and have been in a recovery for 8 years. That's the good news. The bad news, this is not a robust recovery. It's the worst recovery, really, since they've been collecting this information. I would dare say it's the worst recovery since the Great Depression. And we have not had 1 year of 3% annual growth. Oh, we've had some quarters of 3% or higher, but most of the quarters, and we're going to get information on that at the end of this month, are 1-2%. They're under 3%. Right now, we've had the advance estimate that puts it at 1.1, and I'm giving you too many numbers, but you need to get through your head that what drives this economy is the private sector, businesses. And when business is good, profits are good, sales are up, what happens? Those businesses start to hire people. Those businesses start to make investments. That's what you want. But if business is flat or falling, you typically have hiring freezes, and that's the optimistic situation, or they start laying off people, especially recent hires. Most of the growth in employment has been temporary employees, not full-time jobs. What many companies are doing today, because they can get away with it, is they will hire people, very much like a probationary period, and then after a year or two, they may offer them a full-time job. The rest don't get that. And that's smart from their point of view. It gives flexibility, and they also avoid what? Expensive group health insurance. We're on the verge, I think, of another recession. I no longer make any predictions at all, but it doesn't look good. We could just keep stagnating at a low rate of growth, and I mean low, under 2%, or between 0 and 1, and that's better than having quarter after quarter of negative rates. We haven't seen that yet, but we're getting very close to zero. And remember, a recession is usually defined as two consecutive quarters of negative growth in real gross domestic product, or GDP. And those are what consumers buy, the final goods and services that people buy. So we'll know at the end of this month, a couple of weeks, the first estimate for the third quarter. That's July, August, and September. Now, you got to be careful with that advance estimate, because it's not as reliable as either the second. I would say the second is probably the one that's most looked at. But the reason why I'm pointing this out, what happens a little over 10 days later? We have an election. So the numbers don't look good. We're not in a recession. That's the good news. And the Fed supposedly was going to be increasing their federal funds target rate. That's the rate that banks charge each another to borrow funds. Every bank has to maintain reserves. Those that have excess reserves can loan those reserves to banks that are short, and they usually loan it for 24 hours overnight rate. The Federal Reserve is the United States Monetary Authority's, our central bank, and they have kept that federal funds target rate very low since December of 2008. In other words, we'll be celebrating 8 years of what's called the near zero interest rate policy. I call it unconventional monetary policy. I think I should call it insanity. Many economists, as well as investors, have said the Fed needs to, and should have been, increasing that federal target rate back to a more normal situation based on market forces, where it would be, for example, the short-term rates about 3%. Some would say a little higher, some would say a little lower, but about 3%. Now, I have, for new listeners, you can go to my companion blog for this show, which is at pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K-P-O-P-S .wordpress.com. And this is a show 771. I should have it posted sometime Monday. I usually post it the same day, but I got a little bit behind on some other stuff, so it'll be Monday. And I suspect that what the Fed will do based on this jobs report, it wasn't a very good jobs report. 156,000 non-farm payroll jobs were added in September. Now, the Fed supposedly is data-driven. I just love this. They're data-driven. That's what the Fed chairman will say. We're data-driven. The problem is the models they use have not been very accurate. And the Fed just hasn't been very good in anticipating what the economy will do and what the financial markets are doing, even though they have dozens, hundreds of economists working for them. It's not like they don't have funds. And what they've done since December of 2008 is keep that federal funds rate very, very low. Near zero means at 25 basis points. In 2015, towards the end, they raised it another 25 basis points, so it's 0.5%. And everyone was anticipating that by now they would raise it at least another 25 basis points to 0.75 or 75 basis points. They haven't done it yet. See, there's always a reason, and you can find a reason for not doing it as well as doing it. I think they should have been started to raise this several years ago and raised it roughly 25 basis points each quarter. So over a three-year period, they could take it from near zero to 3%, which is what it really should be. Now, why is this important? U.S. savers, people that put money in credit unions, their banks, savings and loans, talk to them and they get hardly any interest on their savings. That's not the way it used to be because you have what's called a term structure of interest rates. And what really establishes that term structure of interest rates is the target rates of the Federal Reserve. So when they target a very low rate, who gets hurt? American savers get hurt. Not investors, savers. Especially people that are on fixed income and they can't take any risk. Very little risk or zero risk. So they typically put it in a low interest rate savings account. Now, if they want to get any return, they have to take a lot more risk and namely put it in either bonds or stocks, bonds or equity. And many of these people are risk averse. They don't want to do that because if they lose it, they don't have really the time or many of them are retired to earn it back. So they're very, very risk averse. But we need savings. And that's one of the biggest problems the United States has had. The savings of the U.S. consumer, U.S. citizens, has gone down, down, and down. If you compare it to other nations, we're one of the worst in terms of savings. And because of this near zero interest rate, the person or the people getting hurt the most are those on fixed income that in the past relied on at least keeping up with inflation by getting some kind of small but at least equal or higher than the rate of inflation. Ideally, they would like to earn a little more money, so they'd have a little extra money. However, what's happened is even at a low rate of interest, food prices go up and so do gasoline prices. You see, the task of the Federal Reserve, at least initially when it was founded in 1913 and started operations in 1914, was to have a stable value of the U.S. dollar, of our currency. Over a 100-year period, what has happened to a 1913 dollar? To buy the goods and services of a 1913 dollar today, you would have to spend over $20. In other words, the value of that dollar has been eroded by inflation over a 100-year period. So even a small rate of inflation, under 1%, and definitely under 2%, erodes the value of assets that are denominated in U.S. dollars. In other words, the purchasing power of that dollar goes down, down, and down. A simple example, at one time you could buy for a nickel, 5 cents, a Hershey's chocolate bar. Today, that same or near same chocolate bar will cost you a buck. And the reason is we have not had stability in terms of the value of that currency. And that is the direct fault of the Federal Reserve. That is their primary mission. They are very much, in my mind, a failed institution. They have failed miserably if you look at it in terms of what they really should be doing. And it continues. And I think inflation is around the corner. We've exported inflation to other countries. That's why you have devaluation abroad. But I'm getting into this Because what do I think is going to happen? We're going to go into a recession, whether it's the fourth quarter or next year. At some point, we're going to be in a recession. And then what is the Fed going to do? It's going to revert back to exactly what it did in the last recession. It'll go back to this near zero interest rate policy. In other words, the Fed's funds rate will decline back to either zero or 25 basis points. And they will also start printing money, so-called quantitative easing. And we had a series of quantitative easing. And I have a chart on this that shows when it took place. QE3 ended in 2015, a little over a year ago. So they're not printing any more money yet. And that's the operative word, because the way the Fed has reacted is they've opened the spigot in terms of printing money. And what are they doing? And let me explain this. And I'm going to bring it back to the jobs report in a minute. And that's why I'm covering these two stories together, because you need to understand both sides of this coin. What happens when you're in a recession? People are unemployed. Businesses close, or the ones that stay around lay off a lot of people. Business is not good. It's falling. Spending is down. What also is down? Tax collections, income tax, as well as payroll tax. If people are not working, they're not paying payroll tax, and neither is the employer for those that he's laid off. Those that are laid off, if they can't find the job, they're not paying income taxes. So tax collections or revenues for the federal government fall in a recession, dramatically fall. On average, they've been about 18%, but you got to be careful of that number because it really does bounce around, and in your recession, you go below that, significantly below that. What does that result in? It results in a shortfall. Government spending, federal government spending, exceeds total tax collections. That's called a deficit. Now, we're not in a recession. We're not. However, what did I say the deficit will be for 2016 that just ended in September? It's going to be north of $500 billion. $500 billion. Now, why? The federal government has had to issue more and more securities and roll over securities. In other words, as Treasury securities, no matter whether they're bills, notes, or bonds, as they mature, what happens? They have to pay the principal. So what do? They issue new Treasury securities. That's how the game is played. So when you have a huge deficit, and it's only going to get worse, folks, but putting it in context, if you think it's bad now, remember the first year of the Obama administration, the deficit was over $1,400 billion, not quite $1 trillion more than it is now. It looks like $900 billion less, $800 or $900 billion. We'll get the exact numbers. The key point is this. Yes, the deficits have gone down. That's the good news. The problem is we're nowhere near a balanced budget. See, a balanced budget, there's no deficit. And usually, if your economy is growing and you have near full employment, in other words, around 3%, the economy is booming, what happens in a boom? Tax collections go up and you shouldn't have a deficit if you're controlling federal spending. And they're not doing that. They are not doing that. Because the economy has been in expansion since July of 2009. In other words, over 7 years, going on 8 years. We're not even close to a balanced budget. And we're not going to be as long as we have a two-party system of Democrats and Republicans. The Democrats just want to grow the size of government. Now, they don't call it government spending. They are very misleading. They call it investment. We have to invest. We have to invest in education. We have to invest in infrastructure. We have to invest. When they say investment, they're saying, we got to spend more money. Apparently, they haven't gotten the memo. We're broke. We're in debt and we're burdening. What are we doing? We're putting more and more debt on future generations. I consider that immoral, unethical. Are we talking about this on our debates? I bet this is never mentioned. Never mentioned. Because neither party wants to talk about this. Because if they talked about it, then you have to point out, okay, if we have this massive debt of approaching $20 trillion, and year after year we're just adding to it, and that's only the tip of the iceberg, what they're not talking about, and this is the bigger scandal, is what's called unfunded liabilities. You see, the real debt is over 5 to 6 times what that $20 trillion is. Because we literally do not have the money to pay for those future benefits. That's why I say around 2030, maybe sooner, maybe a little later, but not that much later. We have a day of reckoning. The debt bomb blows up because the baby boom generation is retired, all of it. That's 75 million people. And you have people that were born before the baby boom generation. We'll have upwards of probably about 100 million people collecting Social Security and Medicare. That's just a rough estimate. And they expect to get that. Why? Because when they worked for 30, 40 years, they paid taxes. Now, the Democrats will say, and they have been saying, no, it's not taxes, it's a contribution. Okay? You can call it what you like. I call it payroll taxes. But I paid payroll taxes. And my share and the employer paid his share. That's nonsense, folks. That's just to make it more, how should I say, acceptable when they first passed the Social Security Act. So you have a lot of people that feel legitimately entitled to both Social Security and Medicare. They'll say, by God, I paid into it for 40 years or more when I worked. I paid into it. Where's my Social Security check? Where are my Medicare benefits? Those are a lot of voters, folks, and they vote and they pay attention. That's why the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are scared to death of doing anything about one of the major drivers of this out-of-control spending. So what's going to happen? Ultimately, payroll taxes are going to have to go up. And that means people that are working today, typically between 20 and 70, let me back up, between roughly 20 and 65. Over time, I think the retirement, the age for qualifying for Social Security and Medicare will go up. That's one of the things that will happen. But I'll get to that in a second. People that are working today, because Social Security and Medicare is very much as a pay-as-you-go, people that are working are paying for the people that qualify for the benefits. And we don't have enough money to cover those benefits. That's why we have unfunded liabilities of over $100 trillion. There's a range of estimates with different assumptions. What you should take away is you have a national debt, gross debt, approaching $20 trillion, and you have unfunded liabilities of at least $100 trillion. Add them together, it's $120 trillion. That's the size, the scope of the problem. You seldom, if ever, will hear that number spoken on television. They don't want to scare you and me, because we might get angry and vote people out of office. So you don't talk about that. And if you do, it has to be a rather serious, boring program that most people aren't listening to. Oh, it's talked about on talk radio. I'm talking about it. But I have a rather small audience for now. Believe you me, it's going to grow immensely in the future. Why? People are worried about this. People that have already retired or worried about it, people that are approaching retirement, such as the baby boom generation, are definitely worried about it. People that are working today in their 30s and 40s are worried about it. Many think, especially young people today, they're never going to see Social Security and they're never going to see Medicare. They know that the numbers don't add up. In other words, neither Social Security nor Medicare are what actuaries call, it's not actuarially sound. We have not set aside the funds and invested the funds necessary to pay for the benefits. So where does the money have to come from? There's only one, there's three places. From tax revenues, and that's where it should come from. Second, debt, issuing debt, and the third source is printing money. Ideally, you should pay for it with tax money. And the biggest tax that the American people have today is not the personal income tax, it's payroll taxes. And if you look at your check, you know that. Now, obviously, if you're making quite a bit of money, that's not the case. But I'm talking your average American making the median salary for a household, somewhere about $55,000 or less. So if you're making $55,000 or less, your biggest tax by far is payroll tax. It's simply not going to be enough to fund Social Security and Medicare. That's why I've been recommending, there's a way out here. And a start is just closing 8 departments. Are they talking about that? No, no one's talking about that. No one. Donald Trump's not talking about it. Hillary Clinton, if anything, would expand it. So they're not talking about that. Donald Trump has made clear he doesn't want to touch Social Security or Medicare. So, and Hillary Clinton doesn't want to bring it up. She wants to expand it. She actually wants single payer. What's frustrating is a lot of these people, unfortunately, are trained lawyers. They don't understand economics. They don't understand business. They're all about staying in power. And they simply have not gotten it through their thick head as the United States is broke. We can't keep doing what we've been doing since 1935 when the Social Security was passed. And in 65, under LBJ, we had Medicare. And both of those programs were grossly underestimated in terms of what the liabilities would be. Why? It's not hard to understand, but you need to think about it. What's happened in the last roughly 80 years since 1935? There have been dramatic advances in medicine and the public health of American citizens. So people are living longer, both men and women. You see, when Social Security was passed, very few people lived to 65. You had to live to 65 to collect it. So for many, many years after 1935, really until late 50s, early 60s, people weren't living to 65. They died, usually in their 50s or early 60s, of heart attacks, cancer, stroke. But because of advances in medicine, technology, people today are living beyond age 65. They're living into their 70s, 80s, in some cases 90s. That's the problem. That's why all these estimates, although they're redone every year, have been wrong, wrong, and wrong. And to the extent that this advances in technology and medicine continue, people will be living for a long time. Most people in 1935 never thought they would live to 65, and most people didn't retire. They died. And when they reached 65, had nothing. That was the case for Social Security. We have to provide the elderly with an income when they retire. There just weren't that many older people. I forget the exact number, but 1900, the life expectancy was, I think, 47, 48, around there. And it's gone up, up, and up. And that's the life expectancy at birth. So what's happened is infant mortality has gone down. People are living a long time. And their biggest bills in terms of medical care are usually in their last year of life, actually the last 6 months. And that typically is when they're in their 60s and 70s or 80s. See, that's why government spending, one of the reasons government spending is out of control. It's demographics and the fact that we have so-called social insurance programs. That's what Social Security, that's the label or category they give Social Security and Medicare. It's social insurance. Why is that misleading? It's not insurance. It's not actuarially sound. It's not. Because what people are collecting in Social Security, if they live and collect it, is far in excess of what they paid in as well as any investment returns. And the problem is it wasn't invested. The money was spent. That's the dirty little secret. And you can't get mad because the people that did this to us were good intentioned, well-meaning, but they're all dead, dead and buried. And now we're confronting not only out-of-control spending, but a ticking time bomb that blows up. It can blow up at any time, by the way. But it definitely will hit the fan in the next 14 years, maybe a little sooner, maybe a little bit later. Depends who you talk to. And how can they avoid it? Well, first of all, they need to start doing something right now. They should have been doing something 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And we did have a commission that looked at Social Security in the Reagan administration, made some fixes. But we're back at the same place in terms of it's now going to be running. Both Medicare is already running deficits. Social Security is starting to run deficits. Where's the money coming from? Remember, there's only three sources. Taxes, in this case, payroll taxes that aren't adequate. There's a shortfall. Second, debt, treasury securities, or printing money. And the problem with printing money as well as debt, it causes inflation. In other words, a rising general price level. And what that means is your money buys less, less, and less. Remember that candy bar that you could have bought in 1913 for a nickel, today it'll cost you a dollar or more. And maybe you won't get the same size candy bar. That's inflation, folks. And the problem is many people that are on fixed incomes are the elderly that are getting Social Security and Medicare and rely on that. Now, they might have some savings set aside. But I told you what's happened to savings accounts. Who got hurt there? The banks didn't get hurt. The banks got bailed out. The people that truly got hurt were the American people that are savers, that are risk averse. Now, I'm sure some economists will say, well, what they should have done is put their money in stocks. The problem is, what is the problem? Do you even think about what the problem is? It's risky, and it is risky. Stock market goes up and down all the time. And if you time your decisions wrong, you could be wiped out. And people are wiped out. Some are lucky, some aren't. But they don't have the luxury of working another 5, 10, or 15 years to get back to what they were hoping was their retirement nest egg. So what's the problem? And how do we solve the problem? The problem is out of control government spending. What's the solution? Yeah, we got to cut government spending. But what else can we do? We can get back to much higher economic growth rates. Historically, the United States economy over many decades, and it very much depends when you start and end what the growth rate is. But it's been, depending on the study, anywhere from 3 to 3.5%. That's the so-called trend line. And if you have a trend line of about 3.5%, how many jobs roughly, and this is approximate, folks, should be created each month? A good ballpark figure is about 300,000 jobs. Keep that number in mind, 300,000. We haven't had many, if any, months of 300,000 jobs being created. Most of the statistics up until recently were a little over 200,000, 225,000, 230,000. Now we've fallen back. We're under 200,000. We're nowhere near 300,000. Now, so if the economy were truly growing at 3.5%, in other words, the economy was not booming but doing well, what happens? People make investments, businesses make investments, they hire people, and they make profits, and they pay taxes, and the government gets more tax revenue. That means every month roughly 300,000 in jobs. Of that 300,000, anywhere from 130,000 to 150,000, I would even say upwards of 160,000, is needed just to keep up with population growth, demographics. Because every month you have people entering the job market for the first time. They either graduated from high school or college, or they've dropped out of high school or college, and they look for their first job, whether it's part-time or full-time. So to keep up with that, you need at least 150,000 on average, month after month after month. So 156,000 jobs being created. Okay, that keeps up with population growth, but is that really what our goal should be? The answer is no. We want to get back to a near full employment rate. And again, economists will differ as to what that should be. I'm of the school generation that it should be 3% or less. We haven't had that. We haven't been close to that in years. I dare say decades. Definitely we should be under 4%, though. I think most economists would say near full employment rate is somewhere between 3 and 4%. Only your political economist, in other words, those that work for one of the political parties, will say, well, maybe 4.5 is full, near full employment. No, it's not. They're BSing you. So we need to have a growth rate of 3.5% or more, and ideally more, 4.5, 5.5, 6.5. Does that mean we can sustain that rate a growth month after month? No. But that should be our goal. And you're only going to accomplish that goal by encouraging what? Business formation. Because that's where the new jobs are created. You want new businesses to be formed, and they will, at least initially, and to the extent they're successful, hire people. They're the typical neighborhood small businesses, started by entrepreneurs that had an idea, risk their money, their time, and efforts in pursuing that idea. And to the extent that whatever that idea meets a need or want of the American people, they will be successful, especially if a lot of people need it. In other words, it's a mass want. Now, 50 years ago, did anyone say, I need an iPhone? No. We didn't have the technology, the science to produce an iPhone. And most people didn't carry phones. I'm of the generation, people carried phones? Are you kidding me? That was out of some science fiction movie. Today, if you go on any college campus or any office, what do people have? What are they looking at? They have something in their hand and they're looking down. Yes, it's a computer. Yes, it's a phone. Yes, they're browsing the internet. All of this is relatively new technology. That's a want that many people couldn't even grasp 15 or 20 years ago. And when new technology comes out, it's usually quite expensive. Think of flat screen televisions. When they first came out, it cost you tens of thousands of dollars to get one if you really wanted one. Now you can go in your local Walmart and get one for several hundred dollars, depending on the size. You can easily get one for $100 to $200. It's not state-of-the-art. See, TVs used to be big. They used to have tubes. They used to be heavy. They were a piece of furniture. Not anymore. They're a flat screen. They're thin, and they don't weigh very much, but they look terrific. See, I can remember the early days of television when I was a small child. It was black and white. We didn't have color. Now you have color. And now you have more advanced technology. And what I'm waiting for the prices to drop, so-called 4K television. If you ever go into a store, look at the 4K televisions and compare them to all the other televisions that are there. They're all flat screen, but just compare the image. It is stunning, folks. And those prices are going down, down, and down. And hopefully within a couple of 2-3 years, you can get a 40-inch 4K television for probably a couple of $100, maybe even between $100 and $200. Now, it'd cost you probably $400, $500, or higher, depending on what you're looking at. What happened? We had entrepreneurs in various industries invested their time and money. They took great risk. To the extent that they were successful, they were rewarded with profits. And that meant more and more people were employed. It meant more jobs, more investment, and better products, quality products, cheaper products that met a want of a mass market. That's what you want. Was that done by the government? No, it wasn't. And that's what I'm trying to emphasize. We need to encourage entrepreneurs in the private sector, the business sector, to start those new businesses, expand those new businesses. And the enemy, and talk to business owners, they don't like uncertainty. They need to know what is the cost of doing business. And one of the two things that they'll complain about the most, and it's a legitimate complaint, is tax rates keep going up and down. The tax code, the tax regulations keep changing. It's totally too complicated. And when the Democrats get in, they tend to raise the tax rates. When the Republicans get in, they tend to lower the tax rates. In the meantime, regulation is getting worse and worse. And this discourages what? It discourages first people just starting a business, running a business, expanding a business, investing in plant, equipment, buildings, whatever they need to expand and hire people. In other words, as the government takes more and more of the resources, business formation tends to go down, and so does capital formation. That's why it's essential to downsize the federal government. It's also essential to fundamentally reform the tax code and go to a broad-based consumption tax similar to fair tax. Now, I've given shows on that, but that needs to be mentioned. There's no magic silver bullet here. There are a number of things that need to be done that are not being done. They're not even being discussed at these debates, not even mentioned or alluded to. We're talking about Donald Trump's tax returns, Bill Clinton's sexual adventures, really raping women, and Hillary Clinton's trying to cover it up so she could get elected president. Do the American people care about that? I'll tell you, they don't. What they care about is jobs. What they care about is the economy. And neither political party, neither the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, are addressing the fundamental concerns, the interests of the American people. We need balanced budgets. We need to downsize the federal government. We need to encourage the engine of growth, which is the small business in the United States. We have more small businesses in the United States than any country in the world. That's the dynamo that makes it possible to have big government. It is time for the American people to stand up and say enough is enough to both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. We want fundamental reforms of the tax system. We want government spending brought under control with balanced budgets. And we need to fundamentally reform both entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, the Affordable Care Act, as well as Medicaid and the welfare programs. We can't afford it anymore. The American people are looking for leadership, but they're looking for people with character and integrity that can level with the American people, tell them the truth. Because if we continue to do this, and the phrase used is kicking the can down the road, it doesn't end well. We have a limited amount of time, 10 to 15 years at most, to really change the direction this country is going into. We cannot stand another 4 years of continuing what Obama started. But that's what Hillary Clinton wants to do. She wants a single-payer system. She wants the government to interfere with the private sector because she thinks she knows best. She's never run a business. She's never started a business. And the reason why the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act has failed is because of the government intervention in the private sector. Most people were satisfied with the health insurance coverage they had, and they ruined it. And now they want a second chance and to make it single payer. The American people are saying, hell no. Our premiums are skyrocketing. Our deductibles are skyrocketing. I can't afford it. And like Donald Trump says, I got to be run over by a truck to get any care because the out-of-pockets are thousands of dollars. Not $250, not $500, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. You got to pay first. And before that, you got to pay a huge premium. The American people are mad because the elites of both parties are not listening to the American people. And what are they doing? Both parties, they want to open the borders so they can have cheap, compliant labor. The American people are saying no, no, no. And see, if the elites continue doing, you're going to get a revolution. The word is getting out. The American people no longer trust big lie media. They know big lie media is dominated by six corporations, of which the owners and chief executives of those corporations buy and pay for politicians of both parties. You're not going to get the truth from them. They're hiding the truth. They're minimizing the truth. They won't even tell you the number of illegal aliens that are here. And let me tell you, it's not 11 or 12 million. It's somewhere between 30 and 50 million. It could be higher. We don't want to scare the American people because they might get mad. You better believe they will get mad. And it's only a matter of time before the dots are connected. I'm connecting dots here. See, you can't just look at the unemployment rate. You can't just look at the federal funds rate. You got to understand the relationship and what is driving this and what needs to be done to correct the situation. We need leaders. We need problem solvers. We need people with vision. But what we really need is people with courage to tell the truth. We're not hearing the truth, folks. These debates are largely distractions. The fundamental issues that need to be addressed are largely economic issues. Not entirely, but largely. The American people are concerned about what? Jobs, the economy, wages, taxes, inflation, unemployment, national security, the invasion of this country by 30 to 50 million illegal aliens, terrorism, Social Security, Medicare, their health insurance. That's what they're interested in. Are we really hearing anything significant about these topics at the debates? Not really. Oh, there might be a question or two and a rather short answer. These debates, and I'm going to cover them in the probably my Monday and Tuesday show. This is Friday's show. We'll have news events, and we'll be distracted. WikiLeaks will release some documents that should be revealing. Hillary will go after Trump. Trump will go after Hillary. Are they addressing what the American people are concerned about? They're concerned about terrorism, but that's not their number one concern. There have been polls for many, many years, and invariably, what are the first four or five concerns? Jobs, the economy, the U.S. budgetary deficits, and that's a big legitimate concern. The national debt. Now, they won't say unfunded liabilities, but that's what they're saying when they say Social Security and Medicare. Will it be around? Will it be funded? They're very much concerned about inflation, especially if you're on a fixed income. And if you're young, higher and higher taxes where they can't find jobs and a huge debt starting out if they were foolish enough to take college loans. The United States needs to get its financial house in order, and it doesn't have much time to do that. And probably the one group of people that can do the most good and maybe save the American dream and save this American republic are entrepreneurs. And I have a section on entrepreneurs if you go to my show notes, and that's at pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And I encourage you to listen to these videos. They're short. Let me just play one. This is part two, tribute to entrepreneurs.
My dad says entrepreneurs are responsible for everything around me, from the technology I use to the clothes I wear. and the food I eat. He says I should be grateful for the entrepreneurs that have come before me, because starting something from nothing is extremely difficult. Many do it against all odds. He says entrepreneurs are the courageous ones, the ones that never give up, never give in, never, never, never. Starting something new takes heart. It takes believing without seeing. My dad says that's faith. He says every organization you see with 10 people, or 100 or 1,000, started with just one. One amazing idea, one brave soul, one perfect partnership, one humble beginning, one heroic mission. And because God inspired the one inspired millions. My dad's an entrepreneur, and someday I'm going to be an entrepreneur too. And so I pray. Dear Lord, the battles I go through life, I ask for a chance that's fair. A chance to equal my stride. A chance to do or dare. If I should win, let it be by the code, with faith and honor held high. If I should lose, let me stand by the road and cheer as the winners go by. Day by day, get better and better. Till I can't be beat, won't be beat. Day by day, get better and better. Till I can't be beat, won't be beat. Amen.
That was a tribute to Entrepreneurs Part 2. I urge you to, if you have time, to go to that section and look at several of those videos. Because if there's one group of people that can truly save America, it's the entrepreneur that starts that small business. Many of them fail, many of them succeed, and some succeed beyond their wildest dreams. But in doing that, they provide jobs for millions of Americans. We need to encourage entrepreneurship, and that requires lower taxes that don't change year after year after year. And we need to downsize the federal government, eliminate regulation after regulation. In other words, we need to have a much smaller representative republic, not the giant, obese bureaucracy that is taking more and more resources out of the pockets of the American people. Government is not the answer. Government is the problem. But part of the answer to that problem are entrepreneurs and an environment where entrepreneurs thrive. And to the extent that we go in that direction, we will return to a booming economy where we have near full employment rates, everybody can find a good paying job, and instead of a warfare and welfare state, we have a peace and prosperous economy. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.